You're listening to The Melting Podcast, a little of everything from everyone everywhere, with your host, A.F. Grappin.
Welcome to episode 7 of The Melting Podcast.
You can count! Hi.
Yeah, she's still here.
I live here.
Anyway, I'm AF. That's Aaron. This is episode 7 of The Melting Podcast. Happy New Year!
Yay! Woo!
This is a Stoke the Fire episode. This one goes all the way back to prompt number 1. Actually, before we get to the stories, we're recording this in our new upgraded sound booth.
It's a cardboard box with foam. I helped make it.
So hopefully the sound quality is better. But just if you have any feedback, let us know. If you have any ideas for how we could make sound quality better, that is always nice. We can always use help. Coming episodes, you're going to have a little bit with the new box, a little bit with the old random foam pieces. But by the time we get to the middle of this year, sound quality is going to be exclusively in the box, so it should all just be, better in general.
We want you guys to think outside the box, but we want to record in the box. The box is our friend.
The box is our friend.
But, yeah, it'll be a hodgepodge for a while till we've gotten a uniformity.
So anyway, moving on to the meat and potatoes of the podcast, our Stoke the Fire stories. We have 2 for you this month. These are for prompt number 1, which is a servant gets asked to do something out of the ordinary. Here's our first story. Read to you by Theo Kazmark.
The Blunders of Lord Gromar Warmouth by Martin Spurnell.
James, you come here this moment!
The family's ancient butler, James, did his best to respond to his new master's orders.
Haste is being made, sir. If only it were that a more passive voice be used.
The burly young man commanding his presence was still a clumsy toddler in the butler's short-term memory.
What? By whom? Said the Lord of Warmouth. Gromar of Warmouth, that be my name. My voice shall be in eternity active. Your exclamations have been noted, Sir Gromar. What is it you desire be done by your humble subject? Shames! I am about to set an epic task for you, the Lord of Warmouth began.
The name, my lord, it was given as James. It is written with the letter J, said the butler.
By whom?
The young lord asked, slightly off balance. His subject never talked back.
By zombies,
was the bland reply.
Oh, yes, those adverbial objects. I called for you because of their wretched undoings.
Adversarial, you mean?
James stood and gave his new master the bland look that was the only expression he had.
A lord of Warmouth must be mean, thank you. And he does not wait on his indentured subjects. The scrivener we employ did not show today, and I am way past tense,
Gromar said with finality.
You must replace the late scribe.
Writing has been well taught to me, sir.
James said.
By zombies,
Gromar injected. James chose to ignore the snide comment.
What shall I scriven for you, Lord Warmouth, and what on?
Gromar gave the walls an irritated look.
Our word shall travel far, and so it will need to be carried.
Carried by zombies,
James muttered.
Can you set my words to the font of my family?
Gromar held out a sheaf of parchment.
Yes, a bold font that has enough weight to be oblique. It is well known,
James said as he took the parchment and bottle of ink.
By me and your other subject,
he added.
So here, then, what I will you to write,
Gromar intoned, pacing the room, fist clenching and unclenching behind his back.
To those whom it may concern,
he lowered his voice.
I want that first sentence to be terminated by a bold exclamation mark.
One such shall be added,
James assured him. The Lord of Warmouth took a deep breath.
I, Lord Gromar of Warmouth, hereby declare that I subject every object in this my realm to be inflected with the unadorned awe of subjugation.
James turned a bland gaze on his master.
"Any subject that objects to this rule shall be objectified?"
he offered to end the awkward pause.
"Yes, those shall be my profound words," Grimmar said. "Any who fail in their proper address of Lord of Warmouth shall suffer sentence no less than 5 nouns. In transitive cases, we shall add verbs, which may or may not be purple."
"Lordly words," James said. "Harshly spoken."
"Zombies don't speak," Grimmar said.
"Harshly spoken by a true Lord of Warmouth,"
James said. Nodding, Grimmar raised his fists.
"Wait for it," he said, and shook them. "Be warned, my subjects, I shall bend you to my will. Any objections shall be ambushed, obliterated, and annihilated."
"Obliterated?" James said.
"Yes, that. By the armies of Lord Warmouth,"
the Lord Warmouth exclaimed.
"An army recently boosted,"
James smirked.
"By zombies?"
"Exactly. Each riding a dead horse," Grimmar smiled. "Once I sign this inflective letter, you will seal it with vile word magic. Have the spell checked immediately. I want this sent out with the very next thesaurus."
"Have things scaled up so far they require lizards?"
James inquired poetically as he waxed and sealed the letter by the light of the waning moon.
"They are no more dire than they always are, but a lizard's brain is unlikely to be noticed," the Lord intoned.
"By zombies,"
his loyal subject finished.
He has a sexy man voice.
Theo?
Yeah.
You only say that because he's your husband.
Yeah.
I've been talking to Martin Spurnow on Facebook a little bit. He is a really, really cool guy. He was recently on the Roundtable podcast, so I'm going to find that episode and actually put a link to it in the liner notes. Go listen to it. There's some really cool insight into how he writes, because he's not a native English speaker. And this story really, I think, exemplifies his word origami that he likes to do. So go check that out. That's some really cool stuff.
They don't need you telling them what to do. Gosh!
Listen to this next story. The Butler Job by Michael Berganzi. When people say things like, "the butler did it," sometimes they're telling the truth. As I sat in the interrogation room, the realization of what I'd done became all too clear. I had killed him in cold blood. I could still feel it on my hand, though no trace actually remained on my fingers. The police sat me down at least an hour ago and had not entered the interrogation room since they cuffed me to the table leg. I told them the truth when they found me with the bloody knife in hand and the victim lying dead in a pool of blood. The door opened and 2 detectives entered. One sat backwards in the chair. The other leaned against the door, his eyes looking directly at me. "So tell us again," the man sitting said. "You said your boss wanted to die?" "He wanted me to kill him." "So you're saying you assisted in his death?" I nodded. At last, someone believed me. I licked the sweat on my lips, awaiting the next words to come out of the detective's mouth. "You do know that it's still a crime to assist in a suicide?" My heart stopped and started a second later. What did he say? No. They misunderstood me. "He wanted me to kill him," I said. "Look, we don't know for sure if he asked you to stab him in the heart. I mean, this kind of story, it won't hold up in court," and the second man pushed himself off the door with his elbows and walked to the table. "You honestly think a judge and jury are going to believe this crap? Tell us why you did it and maybe we can work something out." "I told you, he wanted me to kill him. What's so hard to understand?" "Keep saying those words all you want," the second man said. "It's not going to change the outcome. You're getting the death sentence if I have anything to say about it." The man sitting down sighed. "He's right. At the very least, we'd need a psych eval in order to prove your boss was suicidal. But seeing as how he's dead..." "Dr. Rosenbaum," I said. "Talk to him. He'll confirm I'm telling the truth." "Yes, good old Dr. Rosenbaum." "Where can we find this Dr. Rosenbaum?" the other man asked. 256 East Central Drive. He has an office on the fourth floor. All right. Wait here. We'll be right back. I waited for the detectives to return. They were taking their time. The other men in the cells were beginning to eye me in an uncomfortable way. One of them got up and walked up to the bars. I closed my eyes, praying he wouldn't come toward me. The door buzzed open, and before I knew it, two officers whisked me away to the interrogation room yet again. What was going on? Why weren't they releasing me? It didn't make sense. The two men slammed me down into the seat and locked the door behind them. They didn't even bother putting handcuffs on me. This night was getting stranger and stranger. The door to the room buzzed and the two detectives from before walked in. This time, their roles seemed reversed. The one leaning against the wall before now sat in the chair backwards, and the same applied to the one who sat down in the chair before. I swallowed the fear in my throat. There was nothing to worry about. This was probably standard procedure for releasing an innocent man. They had a few questions, no doubt. I settled down in the chair and patted my cotton pants to get the dust off the fabric. Well, I asked, what did you find? There was no record Dr. Rosenbaum ever treated your employer. We'll give you one last chance to come clean. Why'd you do it? If it was self-defense, then maybe we can... Well, of course he's never treated my employer. I never said he did. Weren't you listening to a word I said? The two detectives looked at each other, their eyes wide and filled with disbelief. They had to believe me. It was the truth, after all. It was their fault for misunderstanding me in the first place. I never said the person I killed was my employer. Dr. Rosenbaum was the one who wanted me to murder the man. But why didn't he tell them the truth when they asked him? Before I knew it, the two detectives were on me, wrestling my body to the ground as I struggled to break free. No, he said he'd tell them everything if I did the deed. Why would he go back on his word? Damn him. Damn Dr. Rosenbaum. He said he'd take the blame for it. I thought he was my friend. He was supposed to help me with my issues. Shouldn't this count?
So those were our stories.
The butler did it. I figured it out. It was the butler, right?
Don't eat the box.
Oh, sorry.
We're going to take a break for a promo.
Brian Lincoln Productions presents an exciting new audio drama, Hidden Harbor Mysteries.
Hidden Harbor is a city of light beset by darkness.
One of my girls, what works the streets, says there's an army of women.
Barbara Wilson uses her mystical powers to defend the innocent.
Give me strength to continue my pursuit of those who've done evil in this city.
While others scheme in the shadows to destroy her.
Fan Phantom, they call you. You're out there somewhere, and I will have you.
Valiant heroes.
I'm used to making deals with the devil, but this is a first time.
Black-hearted villains.
I expect you will be difficult to break.
Pulse-pounding action. As the forces for good battle the architects of evil.
Confound it, Barbara. I knew something like this would happen. You went in without thinking.
We are bound by heavy chains. A simple leash can feel like freedom.
Hidden Harbor Mysteries is written by Jay Smith and produced by Brian Lincoln. Find out more at HiddenHarborMysteries.com.
All right. Two really great stories.
Don't bite the box.
It's fun to bite. All right, so what we have next is a main ingredient story for our next episode, but we really would rather not because next month is February, and you know what that means. Lovey, lovey, gooey, lovey, goo. So if you have an idea for something that goes with one of our prompts that could fit in with the gooey, lovey, disgustingness, that would be great. You should send it our way. And we will love you because that is also in keeping with the theme of lovey, gooey, lovey, goo. Back to you.
So we're issuing a special challenge for this month. Flash fiction doesn't take long to write. At most, 1,500 words is what we'll accept. We've got two prompts out there. We're challenging you to take one of our prompts and make a love story out of it. Get it to us by, I don't know, around the 20th, and you could be in our very next episode, which wouldn't that be awesome? I mean, come on. Love. That's our challenge. take one of our prompts, make it about love. Let's go ahead and do the prompts so that they actually, you know what we're looking for. Prompt number 3 is each food in your refrigerator has a different effect on your mental health.
And prompt number 4 is a company has received an order of fledges. They did not order them. So, challenge has been issued. Take one of our prompts and baste it with love.
Get it to us by January 20th, and we should be able to get a Valentine's Day episode that's all lovey and gooey and gross.
Saccharine. Soaked.
Sappy.
Delicious.
Oh, God.
What?
I don't want to eat love.
It's a good thing you're single. Oh!
And on that...
Oh, burn!
Don't burn the food. On that note, this has been the Melting Podcast. Go out there, write, and feed the masses.
Thank you for listening to the Melting Podcast. You can find our website with submission guidelines and current prompts at themeltingpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at Melting Podcast or email us at themeltingpodcast@gmail.com. The Melting Podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license, which means you're free to copy it and share it, as long as you don't change it, don't sell it, and always link back to the website. Sound effects are from the Free Sound Project, and the music is by Drew Rich Creek.